We basically created this program, created a program, a technology system to support it, and then we pitched it to the leadership, and it ended up being a very successful program, and we were able to quite a bit of waste. We actually received what was called a Hammer Award from the Clinton Gore administration, recognizing the work we did. And the hammer was symbolic of the cost the government spends to procure. I remember at the time it was a $7 hammer cost something like $50 by the time you add on all the administrative and the procurement processes and everything else.
Welcome to Elevate Your Career, the podcast dedicated to empowering individuals from all walks of life as they navigate the ever-changing landscape of their chosen fields. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of professionals from various career stages to uncover the secrets behind achieving success in any industry. We'll explore how they achieved their career goals and the paths they took to get there. Your host is none other than Nicole McMackin, CEO of the Irvine Technology Corporation, ITC, an award-winning information technology solutions and staffing provider. Now let's get to the show.
On today's episode of Elevate Your Career, we will be speaking with Judas Apshago, Chief Digital Officer of Amtrak and an award-winning CIO. Judith and I will touch on many concepts throughout our podcast to include how at a young age she began working for the DoD and regularly interacted with four-star generals, her journey of creating her own personal board of directors, and how curiosity contributed to her overall success. Judith is down to earth, she's authentic, and demonstrates through her story how she has built and maintained strong relationships that have elevated her own career. Let's welcome Orbi CIO Award winner, Judith Apshago. Judith, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Super excited to have you. Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year to you. We're already halfway through January already.
I know it. I know it. Isn't that a scary thing? I know. You're actually my first recording since the new year. So I know this has destined to be the best. So welcome.
Absolutely.
So Judith, we met, a couple months ago and were introduced. And a personal friend of mine had suggested that we speak because you have had an incredible journey in your career. And she had thought there was many takeaways for our listeners in regards to how you reached your role in the technology vertical at the C-suite. And so, you know, I'd love to dive in. But as you know, I always love to start our podcasts with a fun fact that maybe a lot of people, you know, who know you maybe wouldn't know about you.
Yeah. So those who are close to me know this, but some may not know that I'm one of 13 children. My dad had two before he married my mom. They had 11 together, and I'm third from the oldest of my parents' 11 children.
Oh my goodness! Well, that is a big family. So, how many grandchildren now are there? And
a good question. I haven't actually counted. I'd say more than 10, less than 20.
Enough to form a football team, perhaps.
Exactly.
Well, that is really great stuff. Let's jump in and let's talk a little bit about growing up and where you grew up. And, you know, maybe we could start even as far back as high school. And maybe let's also start with your first job. And then we'll take a journey through your career. And, I'll jump in and ask a few questions and see if we could really extract some good stuff for our listeners.
Sure. Sounds good. Well, I'll actually go back to my early childhood, just because I think it shaped who I am, but I'll make it brief. I was actually born in Israel. And when I was six, we moved to a farm in Kentucky in the middle of nowhere. I was 5 miles down a gravel road on a school bus to get to elementary school. And so very, very remote. Lived in Kentucky until my first year of high school. And then we moved to Maryland. And I thought I moved to the big city. And it's funny because I met my husband in high school. In our senior year of high school, we met. He came from New Jersey to Maryland and thought he had gone back to the country. And I said, you don't know what country is.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah.
My, so,
Yeah. My cousin lives in Murray, Kentucky, and she grew up here in Los Angeles and recently moved there with her new husband. And it's really funny because it's so different, as you can imagine, from living in Los Angeles to exactly like dirt roads and, you know, just seasons. How about that? I mean, that on its own is such a nuance, right? But yeah, so that's very different.
Yeah, so definitely. But I think it shaped who I am. And, you know, I wouldn't live there by choice, but I think it helped shape who I am today. But we stayed in Maryland from high school. That's where I am now. So since my ninth grade year, I've made home in Maryland. That's really where I consider home. And my mom is still in Southern Maryland. Most of my siblings are within a couple of hours of here. I do have a few who are a little further out, but it's just kind of feels like home to me.
Oh, I bet. And my goodness, with all your siblings too, I think, you know, just having them, you know, somewhat in a close vicinity is super nice. And so in Maryland, you moved from Kentucky and, you know, what was your experience? What was your first job? And did you know that you wanted to enter the field of technology, or was it even of interest to you at a young age?
No, I always thought I wanted to run my own business. So my first job was actually babysitting. I started babysitting because I had so many siblings. So I started babysitting my own siblings, but then started babysitting other people's kids when I was about 13 or 14. And my first real job, you know, where I actually went and got a paycheck was I worked just in clerical work for a law company one summer, but most summers I worked for Pizza Hut. I was a waitress, and I waitressed actually through high school and through college. And during college, had an internship as a financial analyst at a bank. And my majors were math and finance. So I think I thought I'd go down a finance business path. And I did get my first job out of college with the same bank, but 6 months after I accepted that role, I was contacted about a role with Department of Defense, and it was a financial analyst role, but it was really more focused on process improvement, and it was early days of technology, but it was looking at how can we make the government operate a little bit more like private industry. And I'll date myself here, early 90s, reinventing government, under the Clinton-Gore administration. So we were essentially internal consultants to the Department of Defense to try and make the operations more efficient. And that sort of led me to technology, because in those days, any type of process improvement was naturally, and even these days, was naturally, how can we use technology to make things more efficient? So sure. The process improvement mindset, sort of, I just fell into technology. And I think having the math major and the business background helped me in the consulting days, and just sort of landed me there. It wasn't by design. It was a little more by happenstance, but yeah. I think it was a good path.
Which I find often is what happens to the majority of us, right? Is just happenstance and one thing coming into the next. But taking a step back, so when you were in high school, it sounded like, you know, you did some babysitting, some clerical through college. And then you mentioned internships. Mm-hmm. And how did you get that internship?
Yeah, you know, actually I had an internship in high school as well, which a professor helped me get at our local power plant. But the one in college was really the school, the career center. I worked through them, and they were able to connect with me with a local bank. I actually was a teller for a summer, and I think that helped too. So I made some connections when I was working on my summer job as a teller, and then I was able to work in the finance department as an intern. And then when I graduated, they offered me a position.
And was that were you a teller at the same bank as?
Yeah.
Oh, you were. Okay. It's interesting because I find that, especially for a lot of kids who are in college, it is almost impossible for them to get a job when they are coming out. And their first job, especially in the IT realm, I find is the hardest they will get. And, you know, there's some really, really talented individuals. And if they are not doing internships, at least through their junior and senior year, it is almost impossible for them to get a job. I mean, people are pulling strings for them, and which is fantastic. But for, you know, the kid who's coming up who doesn't have real connections, to have any strings pulled, it is quite challenging. And so I find that individuals who take on internships, typically those internships, if they stay at that organization, say for maybe sophomore, junior, senior mm-hmm. year, and in different capacities, those organizations typically end up hiring them to work. And then I tell them all the time, listen, you're going to get that job. You stay there for a year, for two. You're never going to have to look for another job. You are going to be recruited, which sounds very similar to what happened to you, right? Yeah. You were there 6 months and then boom, you're already recruited to a different organization where it sounds like you had some stayed at some with in some duration.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And even where I am now at Amtrak, a lot of our interns, you know, if we have good, solid interns and we have entry-level positions open, that's sort of a natural move, you know, if the positions are available. So I agree. I think internships are critically important. I have a daughter actually just started at college. She's a first-year student, and she's already lined up an internship for the summer, which is awesome for a freshman. So I think that's actually really key. I mean, do as many as you can, make those connections, see if they have a program. Some companies are now doing rotational programs where you can do the internships while you're in college. And once you graduate, if you have those connections, they can get you into a rotational program. And I've just heard two companies that do this. Over the course of 2 years, you get to rotate to three different roles. So you can sort of decide, get a little exposure, a little experience, and then decide which one is the best fit based on your interests. So
yeah. I've Auburn University, my daughter is a freshman, uh-huh. So like yours. A friend of our son goes there and he's a senior, and they offer that program. And so as part of the curriculum, and so he has actually been in Georgia for a semester at an internship, and they do this as part of the curriculum in a rotational basis as well. So, and he graduated, he had two job offers. So he hasn't even graduated yet. I'm sorry. He's graduating in May, but already has two full-time job offers. So it's really a fantastic program. You mentioned Amtrak that, mm-hmm. And you're currently the chief digital officer at mm-hmm. Amtrak, but is it very difficult to get internships there within the organization?
We actually offer quite a few internships. There's a lot of interest. So it really just depends on whether there's a fit. But we do offer internships year round, and those are advertised on our website. And, you know, we do get a lot of interest. So there is an application process, but we're very huge advocates of it. In fact, our cybersecurity department created a whole kind of curriculum around the internships because we were struggling to hire cyber talent. It's very competitive in the cyber field, as I'm sure you know. And so we said, hey, maybe we need to develop that talent and build kind of the next gen workers. So our CISO actually created an internship program where that we hired quite a few interns, and then the top interns, not everybody, you know, we don't have enough room, unfortunately, for everyone to get a position, but some of the top performing interns then had the opportunity to either come back as an intern in the following summer, or depending on what year they were in college, to potentially be able to convert to an employee. So we do have a very active internship program, and definitely, you know, encourage folks if interested to apply.
Well, that is so wonderful because, as you mentioned, yes, there is a huge scarcity in security. So being able to create something through an internship program and then really take that best in class and develop them and keep them, right? That is fantastic. So I'm glad I'll actually direct people your way as well to those internship programs. So let's jump a little bit back. So you leave the bank, you get this phenomenal opportunity. And how did you get that opportunity? Who recruited you out? And let's kind of take it what the steps were from there.
Sure. You know, the DOD at the time, and I think they still do, the government has a program, I forgot what it was called, but it was a progressive program where you came in at a certain level. And within, if you perform within a certain period of time, I think it was a year, you could progress and then another year progress. So it was 7-9-11 is what I remember, the DS levels. And I had applied for the program, but I didn't hear anything for months. So that's why I accepted the role at the bank. I just didn't hear anything from the government. And then suddenly one day I heard oh, we'd like to bring you in for an interview. So I interviewed and was offered the position, and it was more money, but it also had a better career path for me. So I accepted that role, and that's when I learned about commuting because I was working and living in the same town, and then suddenly I needed to commute down. That was in Northern Virginia at the time. So I learned all about commuting. I learned about carpooling. I found some other people who worked at the same place and figured out how to share the ride. But that was a great first role for me. I was with DOD for 4 years. I had a wonderful boss who was a great mentor and put me in roles and opportunities that for, you know, 22-year-old right out of college, it was huge. She put me in front of 4-star generals to present the program that we were creating, which was a fee-for-service program where the government, the agency that we belong to within DOD, was providing services to other government agencies at a fee that had to be competitive with private industry. So we basically created this program, created a program, a technology system to support it, and then we pitched it to the leadership, and it ended up being a very successful program, and we were able to cut quite a bit of waste. We actually received what was called a Hammer Award from the Clinton Gore administration, recognizing the work we did. And the hammer was symbolic of the cost the government spends to procure. I remember at the time it was a $7 hammer cost something like $50 by the time you add on all the administrative and the procurement processes and everything else. So we were able to cut waste, and we got this. I still have the pewter hammer actually today. That I received for this Hammer Award. But that was just a great opportunity, a great way to start my career. Set me in a good place. And like I said, my boss, who was a female, you know, role model for me, was huge. Just the opportunities and the doors she opened for me were huge at that time in my career.
Were there a lot of women in that division where you were?
But, you know, I remember her, and there was another woman leader, and that's all I remember. I remember two kind of prominent female leaders, but a lot of, like I mentioned, it was DOD, so a lot of government, so a lot of men in the key leadership roles, the 4-star generals I mentioned, you know, were typically tended to be more male dominated.
And you mentioned your direct boss, she was a mentor, and mm-hmm. how it's so important for individuals, if someone doesn't take you under their wing and identify you immediately, almost as a protege, right? How do you, or and even in your leadership position now, you know, how do you instill mentorship within your organization, or have you seen it done? I mean, you're definitely a recipient of mentorship from, you know, a woman who looked at you and said, hey, there's something here. She's bright. And let me, you know, take her under my wing and show her the way and make some introductions and things. And those are really what we talk about often with, you know, especially women, let's seek out mentors if you don't have one. And as you know, Judith, you're part of our Women in Leadership program, and a big part of that is the mentorship process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you could just step back and just talk a little bit more about mentorship, and then, you know, you obviously being the recipient of that and how it benefited you. And then again, you know, in your organization, do you have a mentorship program, or how do you align people with mentors?
I absolutely agree. Both as a mentor and a mentee, I think you can gain it on both sides. So I really enjoy mentoring others because I tend to get as much from it, I think, sometimes as they do. I've been mentoring people throughout my career. I have mentees today, both within our company and outside of our company. And I've had, you know, it's interesting because I have tons of mentors and role models that I've looked up to that have helped me throughout my career, but none of them were ever through formal mentorship programs. It was all through introductions, through networking, through relationships, just building relationships. And I never, you know, as I look back and I think about people who've been some key mentors for me, I never said, will you be my mentor? I just sort of established.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Yeah, I was just going to ask, how do you do that, right? It sounds like you didn't. I mean, was it just natural, or?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. Yeah, I actually encourage people to do that. I didn't do that. It just sort of naturally happened. And if you were to ask some of those folks today, or mention to them that I viewed them as a mentor, they may not think so, because they may have just thought it was a conversation. But in my mind, I was getting so much from that conversation that to me, they were a mentor without even necessarily knowing. And I have what I call my personal board of directors. So I've created over the years this collection of people that I reach out to on different things. And there's some that I'll reach out to, you know, for example, I reached out to a friend the other day, or another fellow CIO who happened to be an expert in a certain industry, because I wanted to understand more about that industry and some of the things that are happening in the technology space to see if there were parallels to some of the things that we're doing. And, you know, I just am thinking in my head through my old fashioned Rolodex, okay, who might know about this or that? When I was between jobs a couple times, when I made career changes and I wanted to bounce some ideas off someone, whether it was an opportunity or how to go about looking, you know, I called certain people that I thought would have something that they could offer for me. So again, they may not have viewed it as being a mentor, but I viewed it that way. But I think for those that I have mentored, I have had people approach me and say, I think I can learn a lot from you. I'd really like for you to be my mentor. Would you be willing? And I've had other people who didn't formally ask, but it just sort of ended up happening. So I think I do encourage people to ask, because I think, especially if you want a regular cadence, mine have been a little more ad hoc, but in terms of me being mentored by others. But when I've been mentoring people both within my company and outside, I do try and encourage some kind of a cadence, and I encourage them to come prepared with, what is it that you think I can offer you? And what are some goals for this mentorship, so that I can make sure that I'm helping in the areas that you are trying to get support. So I think there's a little bit of an art to it, to make sure it's not just unstructured time, that we make the most of the time together, and that there's specific things that the mentee is trying to develop and work on. And usually a defined time frame, but what I've learned is that when they no longer need it, or don't need it as often, it just sort of naturally subsides.
Dissipates, right?
I'm excited to be mentoring in your program. That'll be a new one. I've also mentored in a leadership development program that has it's a training program, but it also has a mentoring component, and it's only for a defined period of time. And that's been great as well. So I absolutely encourage anyone who's not established that kind of personal board of directors or that network or a formal mentorship, to definitely look to, who do you look up to? Why? What do you think they can offer you? And don't be afraid to ask, because it's not a huge time commitment, and the value that you can get from it is, it can be, you know, I've had doors open because of some of the connections that I've made that have really turned my career in a completely different direction.
I 100% agree with you. And it's interesting, McKinsey recently launched a study. It wasn't their most recent study that they just launched. It was the year before. And they spoke about mentorship and the effects it has on women in particular, but everyone as well. But individuals with mentors that are structured are 50% more likely to excel in their field. And so that was, and the study was measured over many, many years. And so I think it's important. And like you said, ask. And sometimes people feel shy, or that they're putting someone out. I will tell you, and I'm sure, Judith, you feel the same. Anyone that has ever asked you to be their mentor, it is such, first of all, it's flattering, but it's an honor. And I've always taken it as such, right? The little Nicole inside me says, why do I have to offer that they actually would want to hear, right? But it's very true. And so to your point, ask, it's important. And especially if you believe in that McKinsey study and you believe in data, and I know you do, obviously, but if you could have someone tell you, hey, you're 50% more likely now to elevate your career because of this, would you do it? And I bet most people would. So thanks for that. I know we just did a little bit of a sidebar, but I felt it was important.
Are you enjoying the episode thus far? We'll be right back after a quick word with our sponsor, Irvine Technology Corporation, ITC. Are you ready to thrive in the ever-evolving tech industry? The tech world is constantly changing, and ITC is your partner for navigating it successfully. Whether you're seeking top-tier tech professionals or the perfect opportunity, we are happy to connect you with talent to transform your business. At ITC, we specialize in placing first-rate, diverse technology talent into corporations, with a particular focus on underrepresented groups in tech. We believe in bringing new perspectives and ideas to your team. Together, we can contribute to a more innovative technology industry. Diversity isn't just a buzzword for us, it's in our DNA. Whether you're looking at bringing on more tech talent or you're a tech professional searching for your perfect role and employer, look no further. Take a look at www.irvinetechcorp.com and pick the best option for you. Be part of our mission to create a more inclusive and innovative technology industry. Once again, it's www.irvinetechcorp.com. Now back to the show.
And so you're with the DoD, you just received your Hammer Award, and what then?
Trying to remember how this even happened, but somehow I got connected to one of the, at that time, big five consulting firms, PricewaterhouseCoopers. Actually, it was Coopers and Lybrand. While I was there, they merged with Pricewaterhouse. And I thought, oh, consulting would be kind of fun because I was essentially doing consulting, but doing it internally to the government. And this seemed kind of cool. So I joined PricewaterhouseCoopers and I did consulting for a handful of years. And I feel like that actually gave me some really good, solid foundational skills, just the way those companies run. I also got to travel a lot. I got to consult to several different industries. So I was exposed to the Justice Department, Department of Defense, some private sector companies, and again, focused on process improvement, but again, started dipping my toe into technology solutions to solve process problems. And that's just strengthened some of the skills that I'd already developed at the DoD. So I was with PwC for about 4 years. And then a friend of mine who had been with PwC left and went to a small IT consulting firm and reached out to me and said, hey, you should come over. We're having a lot of fun. And so I moved over to a company at the time was called ePresence. They were since acquired, but was there for 2 years. And again, kind of similar concept. I moved into project management for IT projects. And I went through some training that were really big on training. So I was able to earn my project management certification. I went through a 4-week boot camp and became one of the first Microsoft certified systems engineers for Windows 2000. And it's funny because I was never an engineer. I kind of grew up through process improvement and project management. But those 4 weeks in Boston, they kind of send you to Boston. You don't get to go home. And you're just taking tests, you know, you're studying in the classroom and you take, I think, 7 tests to get certified. They called me a paper MCSE because I'd never been in a server room, but I was good at learning the content, and it really gave me some good foundational skills so that I could speak a little more intelligently on the technology side. And at that point in my career, I think that was pretty important. So was in that consulting role for 2 years. And then my husband and I had been moving a mile a minute. We renovated a house. We had just gotten married. I got my master's. We were, you know, working full time and just said, we need a break. So we actually sold our house that we just renovated. I, you know, left our jobs and then took a year off and traveled. And
no way.
We're going to do.
Oh yeah. My gosh. Okay. Wait, so how old are you during this? So this is crazy. Okay. So how old are you?
I was about 30. Yeah, about 30.
Good for you. Good for you both. I got to tell you. And that is a leap. I mean, you talk about a risk. I mean, to sell and then just say, hey, that's it. We're going to take this time and we're going to go. So that's phenomenal.
Well, the funny thing is the funny thing is that I'm actually not a risk taker, but my husband kind of, it was his initiation. I think his encouragement, hey, if we're ever going to do it, now's the time. We hadn't started having kids yet. And, you know, we had the opportunity to sell the house and take the proceeds and use it to fund our travels. And I think at the time we weren't sure how long it would be, but I knew I had to get back to work at some point. I didn't want to be gone too long, but we said a year. I think it ended up being about 10 months actually, but we had some great travels. We went to Europe and Asia. And we actually started with 2 months in Costa Rica, which was fantastic. We were backpacking. So we were, this was on a shoestring budget, even though we had made a little bit of money on our house, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, I would not have traded that for the world.
So Judith, you said, it's so funny because as I'm interviewing you and speaking to you, you just said, well, I'm not a risk taker. And it's funny because the entire time that I'm sitting and listening to you, I'm thinking in my head, wow, she's really a risk taker. Because if you think about it, right, and we always don't see ourselves in a certain way, but your ability to move from one job for the next, right? So even your leap from the DoD to PwC, which for those of you who are not familiar with PwC, it's a huge consulting firm, global, and you work so hard and you travel so much. High churn and burnout rate, but phenomenal people work there. And so it's interesting because as you're sitting here saying, and I worked here for 2 years and then I moved over here, it was not out of necessity. It was deliberate. And that comes with a personality that is not super conventional that wants to stay in a company and just kind of, you know, sit there and stay there because it's safe. Right? You felt very comfortable moving into different areas. And then when you just said, yes, and then we left for a year and sold our house and used the money made. I mean, that's risk, right? I mean, and that's good stuff. And you know, what I see often in all the individuals that I interview for this podcast, there are a couple of different components. And one of them is the ability to not get confined doing one thing. It's the ability to raise their hand and say, hey, I'll do it. Having a curious mind and having the ability to put a little bit of risk into what you're doing and to some of the action items. And so that's very much who you are. So I think that's great. So you came back 10 months, you had some amazing travels. And then what? How do you get back? And how do you talk about that, right? How do you come back into the workforce? And how do you say, hey, you know, my husband and I for the last 10 months here have been vacationing and seeing the world, and now I'm ready to come back.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was actually a little worried about that when I came back. I tried to get a leave of absence from ePresence, the consulting firm I was with. And they said, no, I mean, contact us when you're back. We'll see what's going on. As it turns out, when I came back, they'd already been acquired. So things had changed. So we decided it was time to move back to where we still live in Frederick, Maryland. This is where I went to undergraduate school and just really like this area. So we said, you know, this is an opportunity to see if we can find something and live and work in the same city. So I got lucky. It wasn't that long. I found a biotech company, Invitrogen. They've since been acquired. There's a lot of acquisitions in the biotech space, but I joined and became an IT project manager with Invitrogen and had a nice 10-minute commute. I was there for a few years and I was managing large projects. I was asked by the CIO to lead a global project, which was the implementation of, and I'll date myself, the Exchange 5.5 email system and Active Directory when it first came out. For the global company, which was, if I remember, it was, I don't know, 50 countries, three or 4,000 people. And it was a huge project, the largest project that IT organization taken on, in history. And they asked me to lead it. I remember my boss, who oddly enough is my boss today.
Oh my gosh.
I first worked for him back in those days, but I remember he said, I'd like you to take on this project so I can sleep better at night. And I remember thinking, I'm not getting any sleep, but I guess you're sleeping
better. Glad one of us is, right?
Exactly. But the project went really well, had a great team and went live. And shortly after the success of that, the CIO, who again was huge role model, female, huge role model for me, big, big instrumental in my career. And I'll tell you another reason why as we kind of progress through my career. But Karen Gibson. So she gave me what she called a CIO Impact Award. It's actually on the shelf behind me still. To recognize the work that I did. And then she said, hey, we acquired this company down the road. It was about 30 miles down the road. And we'd love for you to go help lead an initiative there to digitize the lab. It was company that does biological safety testing for pharmaceutical companies, and they were still using paper notebooks for all the lab results. And they said, we're trying to digitize the lab notebooks, and we need somebody to help lead the project. And I said, well, I really like my 10-minute commute, but I'll do it for a little while until you can hire somebody to take that on, because traffic in this area can be pretty bad. So I went from my 10-minute commute to an hour, and I did that for a few months. And then the CFO for that business that we had acquired and the CIO, Karen, approached me and said, hey, we need someone to lead IT for this business unit. And, you know, we want to give you the opportunity. You're doing some good things here. So I said, okay, sounds like a good opportunity. So I accepted that role, accepted the fact that I'm not going back to my 10-minute commute. And for the next 11 years or so, I drove down the road to that role. But 3 years later, the company actually sold that business unit, the BioAlliance business unit, to a private equity firm. And I went with the sale. So even though I was still in the same office, same seat, same commute, we became a private equity held company, and I became head of IT for that organization, still under the name of BioAlliance. Did that for about 5 years. We divested from our parent company. I parted ways with Karen and my current boss. And then we really just continued focusing on the lab digitization initiative and quality initiatives and some other automation, and kind of built out standalone systems. And again, had a lot of fun doing that. Then we got acquired again by another company, another biotech company, a life sciences company, Sigma Aldrich. And then we worked to integrate all the systems that we had segmented off of our previous parent company. Now we work to integrate into our new parent company. And again, continued a lot of the process improvement work that we were doing. And then I got a phone call from a search firm, and Karen, the previous CIO, had given them my name, referred me for a CIO role at another company, a mining and minerals company.
Oh, interesting.
So kind of said, okay, well, that sounds interesting. So I'll switch industries again. And it was a great opportunity. And it was here in Frederick. So I went back to
your 7-minute commute. Yeah.
Exactly. So I did that for about 5.5 years, and that was a hugely fun opportunity. We grew the company. The company grew threefold over that time frame, about 5.5 years. We acquired 6 other companies. We took IT from a small mom and pop organization to a much more mature, you know, public company, and we just had a lot of fun with automation and bringing, you know, technology at scale. So. Yeah, then the company decided to move headquarters to Texas. there was a big focus on the oil and gas industry, so it made a lot of sense. The company was a mining company, mined frac sand that was used all over the country, but very heavy focus in Texas. And had already a presence in Texas and decided that that would be a more logical place for the headquarters. So I decided I wasn't interested at the time to make a big move. So I offered to help do the transition. I stayed on as a consultant for a little bit. I helped them replace me in Texas. And then kind of put some feelers out. And my boss from years ago said, hey, I have an opportunity at Amtrak. So
that's amazing.
Trying to do some things here with technology. We really want to develop a technology strategy and use technology and automation to drive the business to be more efficient and really help improve revenue and improve both the employee experience and the passenger experience. So that's where I've been for the last 4.5 years in a lot of different projects.
Yeah,
so.
It sounds amazing. I mean, what a span. You know, from one to the other so seamlessly. And it sounds like your network, right, which is such a huge part for anyone mm-hmm. who's moving careers, right? Can you talk a little bit about that? It sounds like through your story, Karen, right? So she was instrumental, right, in not only working with you originally, but then referring you to the search firm. And it sounds like you had a group of people who knew you and who validated your work, and you really didn't have to, you were more sought after than seeking a role, it sounds like. And correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I've been fortunate that way. I mean, the one time I was seeking is when we came back from our 1 year adventure. I did need to do a little bit of work to get that, to kind of get back into the swing of things and find a role. And it, I was very fortunate to be able to find the one that I did. But yeah, a lot of it was networking. And when a door opens, walking through that door, you know, I could have said no to a couple of different things because they were a little disruptive to work-life balance or to, you know, put a little more burden on my husband to kind of hold down the fort while I was doing certain things for my career. But, I just didn't turn down the opportunities. I took advantage of the connections that I had made, and I didn't ask for people to open those doors, but I was very grateful that they opened those doors. And, you know, I would encourage, I still try and keep in touch with, you know, people who've done that for me, but I also try and do the same for others. And sometimes the smallest act, you know, that you don't really think about, it's just, you know, oh yeah, I'm happy to make an introduction, can lead to, you don't know what it's going to lead to, but it can lead to something really big for someone. So for me, networking is huge.
Was it?
And I don't know if I started it as early as I, you know, would have liked to, but it sort of happened naturally through the course of my career, but a little more intentionally, I'd say in the last maybe 15 years.
Yeah. So. And that's what I wanted to ask. So let's talk a little bit about the intentional networking. How did you do that? Is this, you know, were you networking for professional groups? Were you joining boards, advisory services? Sometimes people are networking through LinkedIn, speaking engagements, or, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be one, maybe it was all, but how were you more intentional? And if you could provide our listeners just tidbits, what perhaps would be some good thoughts and ideas for them to do at various stages in their careers?
Yeah. And I think all of the above is probably the best answer. You know, a lot of it was staying in touch with people as I moved from one job to the next, and LinkedIn wasn't what it is today back then. So it was a lot of just staying in touch with people through email. And as technology evolved, now LinkedIn is awesome. I mean, it's a great way to stay in touch with people, but just making sure I stayed in touch, making sure that if I could return the favor to someone, I did that. I was really fortunate in 2018, a vendor that I had been working with, actually our data center provider, we had some tough challenges. We had to move the data center, and it was a pretty political move, and it was difficult because who was paying for what and accountability, and we worked through it. And oddly, I got an email one day that I had been nominated for a CIO of the Year Orbi Award. And I thought it was spam, so I almost deleted it. And then I thought, well, maybe this is something. So I responded and said, is this legit? And then it turned out that our account manager from the data center provider had nominated me for this award. The folks who put on this award, Capital CIO, had reached out to a lot of different companies in the area and said, hey, are there any CIOs you've worked with that you think might meet the qualifications for the award? So they nominated me. I ended up being a finalist and ultimately winning the award. And it opened up, again, so many doors. And I don't know if the person who I did reach out and thank him, I don't know if he realized that small act probably took him 10 minutes to write a little email to say, you know, I nominate Judith and here's why. But it led to Capital CIO, which is now well established in this area and is part of a national network of CIO organizations, at the time had not yet been formed. But everyone who, they had six different categories of awards based on company size, and all the finalists and nominees who were part of the awards process were invited to become founding members for the DC chapter. So I not only received the award, but also became a founding member of the chapter. And the chapter now has 60 to 70 CIOs, who many of which are now close friends because I've grown up with the chapter since it was formed in 2018, 2019, and have continued to build and form those relationships. And then that led, winning the award led to opportunities to be on panels for different conferences and, you know, opportunities to speak. But I also try and encourage folks. I mean, I was fortunate that I had that door open, but it doesn't have to be that way. There are other ways that people can get speaking engagements or get on panels or attend different industry events and make connections. And, you know, I would say even, you know, you don't necessarily think about building vendor relationships for the long term, but you never know who you might touch in a certain way that might open up an opportunity. So I think to answer your question, you know, the network was built. I was really fortunate that I had that door open, and that's really helped. But since then, I've become a lot more intentional. I have a few other networking organizations that I belong to, and I'll attend, you know, their events and sometimes serve on panels or just attend the event for networking reasons. I you know, stay in touch with folks that I've met throughout my career. I try and pay it forward whenever I can and open doors for other people.
That's wonderful.
And then if I see someone who can make a connection for me, then I'll not be afraid to ask.
Yeah. And I think it's all about, you know, and you're innately, you are a risk taker, right? Or at least I see you. So, but you know, you're not afraid to ask, and you're not afraid to mentor. You're not afraid to step in and help others. You know, you are changing people's lives as you've had some wonderful mentors and people change yours, right? Like you said, just that person, maybe it was a 10-minute email. Maybe it didn't mean anything to him, but it sure ended up being an influencer in your network, mm-hmm. and perhaps the evolvement of, you know, this CIO group that you've helped establish and having the ability to win the Orby Awards. That's a big award. And so, and you know, that is viewed as very prestigious. So congratulations on that too.
Thank you.
And so, you know, and I know we're going to be wrapping up here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about work-life balance. So I know you said, yes, you do have children. And so, you know, how did you do it? What was the work-life balance, right? You've held very prestigious high roles that I know, just being in your industry, take a tremendous amount of sleepless nights and commitment. And so how did you handle being in the role of a technology leader as well as a mom and a spouse?
I would say I haven't mastered it yet. It's a work in progress, even after all these years. But I always tell my team, and I always try and practice family first. When it comes down to it, if I have to pick priorities, family always comes first. And, you know, I feel like sometimes I've had to make some tough decisions, but I've been there for the important times. I even asked my kids the other day, have I ever missed something really important? And it's funny, my daughter reminded me when she was, my older daughter who's now in college, but she reminded me when she was maybe 7 or 8, I had to go on a trip to Texas for work, and I was scheduled to be gone on her birthday. And I mentioned, and I wasn't sure I'd be able to get out of it. And I said, how upset would you be if we had to celebrate your birthday early or late? And she actually wrote a letter to the woman, Wendy, who was organizing this meeting, and said, can you please move the meeting so my mom can be home for my birthday?
Oh my gosh.
Sweetheart.
Oh my goodness.
I know. And I contacted Wendy and I said, hey, Wendy, I hate to ask you to move this meeting because I know it's not easy and I'm not the only one involved, but I have to show you this letter. So I gave it to Wendy and she moved the meeting and she kept the letter on her desk.
That's good stuff. That is good stuff. Yeah. And a smart daughter, by the way.
Exactly. But I have to say, a supportive husband, a supportive family are key. I mean, I would not have been able to do it if somebody else wasn't picking up some of that slack for me. So you know, sometimes it's really hard, and but you just have to know where your priorities are and make those tough calls. And sometimes somebody is going to get upset. Yeah. You just have to make sure, you know, at the end of the day, who you need to be there for. So
absolutely,
I guess. But I'm still working on it. I haven't mastered that one yet.
You and me both. I have just a couple, two more questions. But what were some key qualities that you feel contributed to your success as a leader?
You know, it's funny, you mentioned one of them earlier was curiosity. And I think it's asking a lot of questions. Because I've switched industries, and when I switched, I didn't know that industry. I had to go learn. I would get out in the field. If it was in the mining world, I would put on my hard hat and my steel-toed boots and get out and talk to people at the mines and learn about the process. With Amtrak, I try and get to our yard and maintenance facilities. I try and ride the train and, again, talk to people and learn the industry and learn the business. So I think the curiosity, asking a lot of questions and getting out and understanding the business is critical. And thinking like a business person, that business mindset. I think that process improvement, those roots that I started with in my career have shaped a lot of how I think, and the fact that I don't think like an IT leader. I think like a business leader. And I think about how can technology enable value for the business. I think we talked about don't turn down an opportunity.
That's right.
You know, say yes.
That's right.
And just figure out how to do the work.
That's right.
And I think the last thing is collaboration and partnership. I'm big about relationships, not just for the networking part of it, but just around the collaboration and bringing great minds together. I feel I'm more of a facilitator than a, you know, I'm not always the one bringing the solution. I'm bringing the smart minds together to figure out how we can solution together. So collaboration and partnership is key.
And then last question, but what advice would you give your younger self?
Well, it's funny because I would say take more risk.
I don't think so. I think you've taken plenty. I think, yeah. But that's interesting. So that would be it, right? Take more risk. Yeah. Was there a time that you felt that you should have taken an opportunity? Like, why would you say that? Did and you didn't? That must be it.
Well, you know, it's funny because as you put it in a different light, I can see, I start to see it a little bit of a different way. But, you know, when I have to make a decision, I'm big about getting as much information as I can. And maybe it's the analyst math major in me, but I try and gather as many facts as I can. And I try and not make the decision until I feel comfortable that I know enough. And a boss, another big mentor of mine, Daryl, back in my BioReliance days, I remember him saying to me, sometimes you need to make a decision when you have 50% of the information and you need to just be confident and make the decision and then realize if it's not the right decision, you'll learn from it and you just move on. So since then, I've actually tried to get a little better about not having to have, you know, all the facts and information. But I guess that's kind of how I think about it is just, you know, I like to feel comfortable and confident in my decisions.
With less information, perhaps, right?
Like yeah,
being able to be decisive about something with not having all the data to rely upon.
Put myself out there a little bit and be willing to fail. I want, you know, I want high success, high probability of success.
Right. Well, I will tell you any CEO would hire you any day over someone who's saying, ah, I think I'll run with 50% or 60%.
Right.
So, you know, but well, okay. So as we conclude, I always do what I call fast five and it just looking for kind of quick answers. We've gotten such a wonderful opportunity to really get to know you. But I typically do this when we're speaking just business throughout the podcast. But I feel like we really got an opportunity to know who you are, but we're going to do it regardless. Who was your favorite role model as a child?
I would have to say my mom. You know, she raised 11 kids. I have no idea how she did it. I only have two. She went back.
I think she's my favorite too, by the way.
Then she went back to school, got her bachelor's, got her master's, had a 15-year career, retired from the school system as a librarian, and now she lives the life she wants. And I admire her.
Good for her. Good for her. Your favorite professional book?
I think most recently is a book called Think Again, The Power of Knowing What You Don't Know by Adam Grant.
Right.
It's all about rethinking our assumptions, changing our minds, unlearning and relearning.
Nice. I'll have to pick that up.
Good one to make it think a little bit.
Ooh, this might be good. Your favorite destination?
That's easy. St. John, U.S. Virgin Islands.
I love St. John. Yeah. It's gorgeous. How about your favorite downtime activity that you use to recharge yourself?
My husband and I started biking about a year ago. And I'd have to say biking is kind of relaxing for me. I can't multitask while I'm biking. So that's probably the best thing is forced focus.
And your favorite project?
There was a company when I was with US Silica, the mining company, we acquired a company called Sandbox and we did kind of end-to-end technology solutioning for them. And it took about a year and a half, 2 years. And it was just a great solution, allowed the business to grow 400% and just a big success story. So I think that's my work project. I don't know if you meant home project. We have a lot of those too, but my favorite work project, that was the Sandbox project.
That's great. Judith, thank you so much. This was fabulous. I appreciate your time and I know it's later for you as well. So appreciate you being on the podcast and there were so many wonderful takeaways.
No problem. And I loved our conversation. Had a great time with you, Nicole. It's great to get to know you a little better as well.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today on the Elevate Your Career podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Irvine Technology Corporation, ITC, excels at finding top-tier tech professionals and matching them with businesses. Whether you're an employer with tech opportunities or a tech professional searching for the perfect role, ITC is your go-to solution. Visit www.irvinetechcorp.com for more information. Once again, it's www.irvinetechcorp.com. We'll see you on the next episode.